Z ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. AZ ballot breakdown.
All right, we do this every day at this time, just at 5 after 10. We break down what's happening in the ballot and what the latest are. And when you look at the ballots right now, President Trump is leading President Biden. It's interesting to say it that way, but the two presidents battling each other again. Trump leads Biden in Michigan and Georgia and is razor close in two other battleground states. And the lead in the states where he is actually leading is not that high. We're talking about 3 percentage points. And when you look at this, you look at the former president's legal the controversies, the legal challenges, the cases, court cases against him, what will happen at the end of them? And I'll give you two options that I think are the two that will happen. If the former president is convicted and then has to appeal his conviction, it's going to be damaging on some level with some of the independent voters out there. The other side of that coin is if the former president is found not guilty, there will be a segment of society. If he's found guilty, there's going to be a segment of the society that believes that he was up against an unfair jury and an unfair trial in a place he shouldn't have been tried, and it was a rigged jury and was a horrible thing. But he will be damaged with some independent voters. The opposite is also possible. If he is found to be not guilty, there will be people that believe that the jury was rigged, that there were infiltrators that were Trump supporters that would never vote guilty, and it was an unfair trial. But it will then bolster the argument that has been made time after time, as he has been in trouble legally, but has never been, he's been Teflon to a lot of these charges. But in the end, the American people are going to have to decide on issues. And that's where this is, what this is all about. President Biden is running ads in Arizona right now, trying to close the gap in the polling in Arizona. And he's trying to do this using the topic of abortion. And the ads, I think, are going to be very effective until they're countered. There's going to be a counterattack. There's going to be a ton of money spent by both. I'm just making an observation on the effectiveness of the ads. And the effectiveness of the ads are this, that women are losing their rights. Millions of women are losing their rights because of Donald Trump. And if you reelect Donald Trump, what rights will you lose next? That's the message. And that message has been resonating with some independents that believe that abortion should remain legal. I don't agree with that. I'm someone that's pro-life. I'm looking at this from an observer and saying this is effective. When it comes to the Senate race, it has been a toss-up. It has been in just about every poll we've seen, and the experts around the country have called the United States Senate race between Carrie Lake and Ruben Gallego a toss-up. But here's what they're leaving out. And I don't want to be disrespectful at all. I just had Sheriff Mark Lamb here in the studio. I think the world of Sheriff Lamb. I also know Carrie Lake very well. I'm not choosing sides, but I'm also not going to call a race over that isn't. Sheriff Lamb is still a candidate in the Republican primary. Sheriff Lamb is still going to events. He is speaking with people. He is out there on the campaign trail, and he deserves the respect of being a primary candidate until he or Carrie Lake is not. I'm telling you about the polling between Carrie Lake and Ruben Gallego because those are the polls that people are showing. The race has been called a toss-up. It just recently has been gone. It now says leans Democrat. It leans toward Gallego. Well, I started talking a week or so ago about the effect of ads from Ruben Gallego. Ruben Gallego has the challenge of introducing himself to the entire state. He's known to his district, but he's not a statewide name. Carrie Lake is. She lost a very close race for governor to the current governor, Katie Hobbs, but she was introducing herself, good, bad, or indifferent. They know her around the state of Arizona. She has name ID. Ruben Gallego has been running ads saying, I am a veteran, which he is. He is an honorable combat veteran of the United States military. He's a Marine. And so he leads with that. You know, I lost a lot of men in combat. I know there was sacrifice for someone's country. I was raised by a single mother. I know what it's like to be a working class. He is doing everything he is supposed to be doing in introducing himself in a statewide race. And again, it's been effective. It now leans Democrat. So what happens in these races? Because the counterpunch has not really happened. There hasn't been a counterpunch from the Trump campaign against Biden in Arizona. There hasn't been a counterpunch really from the Lake campaign against Gallego. But I do think that that Carrie Lake has got to make sure she wins the primary. I think that I think that Sheriff Lamb is putting up a bigger fight internally within the Republican Party than anyone is giving him credit for. And so how does that resolve itself? What do you think? If you've heard the sheriff, he's a well-respected sheriff. He's an expert. I think he, you know, with all due respect to anybody else in any other race, you're not going to find someone that is more of an expert on the border issues of what the real problems are and what the solutions look like than Sheriff Lamb, because of his job in sheriff in Pinal County, but also the fact that he's lived all over the world in a lot of South Americans or Central American countries. So I say all of this because the races are far from over. But when you look at how they're shaping up, at least where they are, this is like a championship fight. And round after round, you're going to see someone win a round and somebody else win a round. Are we going to see a knockdown? What's going to be the final knockout punch? All of these are relevant questions. The gap, President Trump was leading in all of the swing states except for one, and that state was a toss-up. You now see it narrowing everywhere. Advertising heats up in the Arizona Senate race, previewing a tough campaign is another headline. We are just seeing the beginning of this. Younger voters, this is another one that's interesting. Younger voters are going toward Trump. In bigger numbers, that Joe Biden has enjoyed a very big majority with younger voters. And what's happening now is younger voters are starting to, and it's not a majority. He doesn't have the majority, but younger voters are looking at Trump more positively, which is a surprise when you talk about the big topic nationally right now being the topic of abortion. It is younger people that tend to be more pro-life than older people. But this is also a part of that campaign. When you've got young people, and I'm talking post-college age but still young, starting in their careers and looking at what inflation has done to them, the potential of possibly buying a home and how it's shrinking for them, at least in the near future, they're looking at ways out. People are looking at the deficit spending. So are we going to look at personalities? If we are, Joe Biden's got the edge. You've got a former president that is dealing with legal battles in multiple states. He's got a criminal trial going on right now. If you look at the top issues for most people, which is border and the economy, Trump has the edge. People don't like the economy the way it is now, and whether you think it's fair or unfair, they're holding Biden accountable for it. And you can't, you know, over 8 million people into this country in the last few years, when this was not the case during the last presidency, the edge on the border goes to Trump. When you look at the Senate race, what are we going to see there? Is that going to be a personality contest? What happens at the Republican primary? I just think there's so much up in the air and so much to talk about. I think it's fascinating. In a moment, we're going to shift to the issue of the economy, because I think it's the biggest issue this country is facing. Now, the International Monetary Fund is talking about their big concerns for the world economy based on the U.S. debt. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
May approach us a little differently this time. Last time around, we talked about the IMF and the other organizations that are concerned about the U.S. debt. But there's some other things that I want to get to. The White House said it will make sure prices remain affordable into the summer. Talking about fuel prices will remain affordable. President Joe Biden's top economic advisor said Thursday, the White House will make sure gas prices remain affordable. I'm trying to find the other story that goes with this that I thought was hilarious. Biden set to block millions of acres in Alaska from oil and grass drilling in Earth Day action. Policies matter. It always does. Good, bad, or indifferent. And every president has policies that are good for America. And every president has policies that didn't work out so well. The interesting thing about this election cycle, we just talked about it is that you've got two presidents that have a four-year track record. And I don't have to defend one or the other. The American people are going to make that decision. That normally what you have is an incumbent president on the campaign trail saying promises made, promises kept. I told the American people 4 years ago that this is what I was going to do as president, and this is what I did as president in the past 4 years, and it worked out well for the American people, just like I said. Re-elect me to president. The challenger doesn't have presidential experience, and the challenger normally says, we've gone in the wrong direction. Here are the areas I think mistakes were made. This is what I'm going to do differently, and these results are going to be better for the U.S. And America then decides on whether or not they believe that to be true when an incumbent president is running for a second term. What we have now are two presidents that each have a four-year term running against each other. You're going to have Donald Trump say, are you better off 4 years ago than now than you were 4 years ago at the end of my first term as president? And Joe Biden is going to have to defend and say what we've done for the American people is better for us and better for the world. And we're a lot of it's going to center around the economy. It is about spending and debt. There's no doubt that the world is saying we are creating way too much debt and we're on a path that's unsustainable. And again, I'm going to reiterate this. There are businesses, good, solid businesses, that say our next, and they tell their shareholders and they tell their CEOs and their, you know, their boards of directors are told and decide this, we are going to borrow a bunch of money for the next phase of our existence. And this is what's good for us. We are going to borrow a ton of money. Well, let's give you an example, whether it's borrowing or not borrowing. TSMC and what they've done. Intel, what they're doing in the East Valley, spending billions of dollars expanding their footprint in the chip industry. TSMC is now taking a step forward in manufacturing chips here in the Valley. They are going to spend $65 billion overall in an investment in the chip industry. They are spending a bunch of money. Their belief is in the next 20 years that that $65 billion is going to mean they have a bigger piece of that pie and that the company is going to be even stronger. It's a local example to when businesses say we're going to spend a bunch of money and it's necessary for the next phase of who we are. If at this $65 billion in investment, they say we've got another $65 billion and another $65 billion and another $65 billion, eventually the businesses around the world and investors and people that are looking at them in the stock market are going to say, you're not a very good investment because you're creating a lot of debt and you're not getting a lot of return for your debt. The United States government spent a lot of money. Whether you think it was right or not, we have been deficit spending for a long time, and it was accelerated in both the Trump administration and the Biden administration because of COVID. The manufacturing and development and distribution of a vaccine, all of the money with PPP loans, all of the money with stimulus dollars for individuals, what we did with food programs and food assistance and increasing the dollar amount that went to American families during that time to sustain American families. All of that money we spent, we printed money, we borrowed money, we've created enormous debt, and we continue our deficit spending. And now because of that continuation, you have everybody in the world looking at this and saying the word unsustainable. You can't keep doing it. That's part of it. The other part of it is the economy for the American people. I'll go back to my Reaganism. I use it every day when I talk about this. We do not have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. I didn't say Democrats. I didn't say Republicans. I said the government. It is the responsibility of Congress. The House, which holds the purse strings, is led by Republicans. The Senate is a split right down the middle, but is run by the Democrats, and the president is a Democrat. Doesn't matter what party they are, the responsibility to cut spending falls upon the shoulders of the government that's there now. Whether it's the next session of Congress, whatever it is, whoever the next president is, there are going to be leaders that have to stand up and say, the path we're on is going to lead us to ruin. Instead of being afraid of losing their jobs and not being reelected because they're not promising more and more money into their districts in the House or into their states from the Senate, they have got to stand up and say, we have got to get ourselves fiscally stable. The reason why is now my kids are 30. They're adults. They've got children of their own. But my grandkids, my great grandkids, yours as well. What's going to happen when those kids are adults. What happens when my preteen grandson is in the prime of his earning life and inflation remains high and the tax bill that they have to pay is unsustainable? What happens when I'm gone and my kids are going to be reaching the age of Social Security and it's not going to be there for them? These are all relevant questions, and we should be, as voters, looking for leaders that are being honest with the American people and saying, I'm going to go to Congress, and I'm going to say no. I'm going to go to Congress, and I'm saying that the only way for us to remain is if we start cutting spending. And yes, people are going to be upset that we cut spending. We are going to have to cut it. And if we don't, this country is going to find itself in a very bad place. It is becoming a national security problem. In a moment, we go back to schools. Arizona public schools are seeing an increase in ESA needs evaluations. I'm going to tell you why this is an important story and a new decision from the Department of Education and Title IX. We'll talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Happy Friday. So let's talk about education. The headline I start with, and then I'm going to tell you why I think this is important. Arizona public school districts, and we got this, I believe, from channeled from 12 News. AZ public school districts are picking up the tab for ESA special needs evaluations. I described this earlier. I'll do it very quickly again. ESAs are called empowerment scholarship accounts. Some people are now calling them education savings accounts. But an ESA originally was set aside for special needs families. If you have a student that is a special needs student, you could take tax dollars attached to your child and spend them within the confines of what was deemed to be allowable in an ESA. You could spend it on the education of your child any way you saw fit, because you, as a parent, are uniquely qualified to judge what are the best educational answers for your child's specific child's needs. And then the expanders of the ESA program said, well, that makes sense, but doesn't it make sense that every parent understands how unique their child is? Children are different. You know, you have a child that's good in school and a child that struggles to make the same kinds of grades. It's easy for one, it's harder for another. One excels in a subject and the other one excels in a different subject. Whatever it is, whatever way you learn, I'm very visual in the way that I learn, and I need to be able to see it. And then I've got to be hands-on. There's got to be a demonstration. We learn differently. And parents know that with their children that are just mainstream students in a classroom. So the thing with the ESA expansion is, why shouldn't you be able to make a decision for your child? But it's also about the other things that happen in schools, that there are some parents that are fans of social emotional learning, or SEL. There are some that like critical race theory, and they think that all of these are valuable tools in creating well-balanced, achieving students and turn them into very good citizens. There are other parents that want to say, you know, I want my child in a traditional school. I want the basics in a curriculum without all of those other things. I don't want the progressive training for my student. I would rather have them in a traditional setting. Who's right? Who's wrong? The answer is neither. Whatever you want for your child should be available. And that's what school choice does. A couple of examples I used, and here's a new one. Title IX. It was 1972. It was written to guarantee and to ensure that girls have access to sports, that they are not excluded. So Title IX was about that, was women and equality in education. And it's changed over the years, and there's been a lot of confusion and conversations about it. New rules in Title IX from the Biden administration are going to work with gender identity. They're going to work with restroom usage, that it's going to be guaranteed in schools that get federal dollars, that there's access to the restroom based on the gender that you identify as versus the gender you were born with. And so there's a lot of parents that don't want anything to do with that. They don't want their daughters in with a biological male, naked in a locker room or in a setting in the restroom. And they have a right to feel that way. And just like other parents that have a child that's transgender, they should be in a setting where they feel most comfortable. They should be able to have their child in that. These changes that are being made I have very strong opinions about them, just like every one of you out there has strong opinions about them. There will be schools, there are going to be schools that are set there that will say to you, we lead the way in social emotional learning. We believe critical race theory teaches fairness and is a way to talk about history in an accurate fashion. And we are going to adhere to these rules where we are not going to be gender specific based on gender representation, but gender ideology, meaning your child can use any restroom they see fit based on their gender identity. And if anybody doesn't like that, they don't need to be at this school. That school is going to be available. If there is a traditional school out there that says, we are going to stick to the curriculum of teaching your children to read and to write and to perform math skills, and we are going to stay away from these progressive ideologies, we are going to go with what is known as traditional education. And when it comes to restroom usage, you are going to use the restroom that you, of the gender that you were born with and that you have right now. You are not going to go with your gender identity. And if you don't like that, go to a different school and go to one of the other schools. That should be available. And I think that's the direction the country is heading. And the idea that school districts and the teachers unions, by the way, the NEA, which is the National Educators Association, and the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, huge fans of the Title IX changes that have been made, spending millions and millions and millions of dollars in campaigns to get legislators elected that are going to change these rules or adhere to these rules on gender. And there's a lot of parents that don't like it. And here's the difference. We can have a fight. We can fight about this, but parents don't have the time to fight. Your child is in middle school for 3 years. Your child is in middle school K through fifth grade is elementary school. Sixth through eighth grade is middle school, and 9 through 12 is high school. It's not a lot of time to go to court and fight battles and stand up to school boards and stand in meetings and be told that you're a domestic terrorist. They don't have time to do that. So what they have chosen is school choice. Okay, I'm taking my child out. And now we have a mechanism in place to take the child and the money attached to the child. You do what you want with your school district, but if you're not going to cater to what I want, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to go to some place that does. That's what school choice has done. And it's not going anywhere. You can demonize it. You can trash it. What's funny about it in Arizona, just to be specific, the superintendent here in Arizona inherited the ESA program. He did not design it. He didn't write it. The previous superintendent is the one who allowed for all of these expenditures under the ESA program that have nothing to do with education. They were allowable under that administration. This superintendent has worked to narrow that so that when you're buying things for your child's education, they pertain to education. He's been making some of those changes. But the news stories are written as if Tom Horn, the current superintendent, is somehow the author of these rules. He isn't. And when a pause is put in place to get parental input on the guidebook for parents, how do you demonize that? When Tom Horn and others are saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hold off on the implementation of new rules for ESAs until we get parental input. That sounds to me like exactly what every voter should want. I want to say I'm an ESA parent. Those are the dollars that I have to spend. And I want some input into what's going to be in the user guide. And that's I'm going to defend ESAs and defend school choice forever. And because it's not going anywhere. All of you out there that classically side with the left-leaning side of the aisle, I respect it. But if you don't understand what an advantage it is for working-class families to have access to the ESA program, look into it. It frees up money for you to have your child educated in a way you see fit. If they're in an underperforming school or in a school setting that you don't think is right for your child, you have options. It's a great thing. Coming up in a moment, Homeland Security Secretary testifies a day after his impeachment and how people are changing their tune. We'll get to it coming up here in a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, Alanis Morissette and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts headed to Talking Stick Resort Amphitheater on June 9th. Their Triple Moon Tour. You can get limited tickets are still available, but if you head over to the contest page at KTAR.com, you get a chance to win a pair. Secretary Mayorkas, I want to go back to this because I just thought this was hilarious. He was debating, whatever you want to call it, with Senator Romney. The United States Senate decided not to take up an impeachment trial. Because I guess the Senate didn't believe that it was worthwhile, even though articles of impeachment were sent over. But whatever. I've talked about this before. It's a waste of time. Even if they impeached him, you're going to get somebody else in there that is at the pleasure of the president, that it's the president's policies. All that still holds true. But Secretary Mayorkas, understanding that the accusations were that he lied under oath in saying that the border was secured. So Senator Romney said, is the border secure or did you lie? And if you didn't lie, what did you mean by it? And he was twisting himself into a pretzel and not answering the question. But I want you to listen to the fallout. In cities across this country, we all understand that there are big differences politically wherever you go in this country. It's what makes us great. And I personally like it. I think that California has a right to identify the way that it does. If San Francisco and Sacramento and L.A. want to be sanctuary cities, they have a right to be, but they should suffer the consequences, and they have. Same with New York City, same with Washington, D.C., and I want you to hear a little bit of this. I played some of this before, the before and after, because in theory, being a sanctuary city sounds like a very kind, good thing to be. The Sacramento mayor, Daryl Steinberg, in March of 2018, said this about being a sanctuary city.
The ICE director said clearly a week ago that for cities that deem themselves as sanctuary cities, that there will be collateral arrests. And here is our city's response to that threat. We will not cower. We will not retreat. We will do everything in our power to stand up for and protect dreamers, hardworking families, immigrants, people who are just doing their best to work, to learn, and to have a part of the Sacramento and the California dream.
4 years later, same mayor, same city.
Cities are not homeless service agencies. Cities are not health and human services agencies. All of the mental health money, all the substance abuse money flows through the counties. In my city, we have gone from a couple hundred shelter beds to now 1,100 every night. Cities don't have the ongoing funding on the health and human services side to do this work.
Sounds great. I agree with it. Listen, I am somebody that I want to be able to help as many people as possible. I admire organizations who do nothing but help people in need. They don't see race. They don't see national origin. They just see need and they fill the need. Governments, these are mayors. The San Diego mayor, Todd Gloria, this is in January of 2020.
Focusing on a border wall that we don't believe is going to be helpful is harmful, particularly when we're dealing with cross-border sewage, which is actually a much more direct threat to our community. And every nickel that's going to a wall that's not useful is money that could be going to make sure that we have clean water and open beaches here in San Diego County.
So 3.5 years later, in May of 2023, same mayor, same city.
We will not be able to service the people that we may receive with the lifting of Title 42 without significant additional federal resources. And right now, I don't know that we'll be getting any of those.
It is perception versus reality. And the reason why I'm hammering this and I'm going to continue to do it is Arizona has been taking the brunt of sanctuary city anger because Arizona's racist and xenophobic, and it's absolutely not true. I've talked to leaders in Yuma County, in Cochise County, border cities, border counties, sheriffs, first responders, political leaders, people in food banks, people in the medical field, and every one of them forever understands the human plight that's crossing our border. They also understand it's been unsustainable. The Yuma Regional Medical Center and the millions of dollars they have spent that they will never recover in taking care of the medical needs of people that have come to this country illegally. Well, now that cities like Denver and San Diego and Sacramento and Washington, D.C. and New York City and Chicago, now that those cities are faced with the same overwhelming problem that Arizona has been facing for decades, now they are singing the same tune as Arizona. I'm not laughing at them. I'm not mocking them. But this is about Arizona saying, we told you, we are not racist. We are not xenophobic. We are not without empathy and sympathy for the people that are coming here. We are saying that when you have an open border, we pay the price. Now it's so bad, you're paying a price, and you sound like us. You sound like us. So why don't we now, instead of this partisan nonsense you've been throwing in our face for years, now that you see the plight of what we've been up against, why don't we together work on a border security solution so that we can have an immigration system we can all be proud of? I hope we get that. Coming up just after 11 o'clock, the governor sets new records on vetoes. We're going to talk about why that's so important and what it means for Arizona moving forward. All that's coming up in the next hour. Stick around.